Blog Talk Radio.
Hey everybody, this is Tristan Nunez, driver of the 7-0 SkyActiv Mazda prototype, and you're listening to Thursday Night Thunder on the Speedway Digest Radio Network.
Hello and welcome to the January 21st edition of Speedway Digest Thursday Night Thunder, episode 64 of the series. I'm host Adam Jason Sinclair, and on tonight's program, Michael Mullally and myself will once again be chatting about the world of modern motorsports. In this, our second show of 2016, we have the honor of chatting with two of the full-time drivers for Panos Delta Wing in the IMSA WeatherTech Championship Series, John Rahal and Catherine Legge. The 2016 season looks set to be an exciting one for Panos Delta Wing Racing. With the new name comes an impressive new livery, reminiscent of the legendary Panos Spirit of America LMP1 Roadster S, 14 years ago, which continues to be a fan favorite to this day. This new livery represents Panos' continued focus as the designer and manufacturer of exclusive luxury sports cars with a truly successful motorsports heritage. Panos Delta Wing Racing returns this year with one goal in mind, to consistently demonstrate the coupe's competitiveness and to be on the podium. The team enters 2016 following strong performances where they were up front and on pace with the leaders in several of the late season races, including Lone Star Le Mans and Petit Le Mans. Our first guest tonight is John Rahal. In the grand tradition of American motorsports versatility, Rahal has proven himself as one of the sport's premier young racing drivers. Beginning his career racing go-karts at the age of 7, Rahal's resume to date is an impressive list of youngest ever. To win a Formula race car in North America, to win the Skip Barber Series, and win the Skip Barber National Event. He has competed and won on road courses and ovals and open wheel, prototypes, sports cars, and stock cars, earning 11 championships, 80 victories, and triple-digit podium finishes, and he is yet to turn 21 years of age.
In 2015, Rahal raced a limited schedule in the Tudor United Sports Car Championship, now the WeatherTech Sports Car Championship Prototype Challenge PC class, competing in only 3 races. Rahal captured 1 podium in Formula Cars. The Georgia native was even more successful despite an abbreviated schedule there as well. Driving in his first partial season of Indy Lights, Rahal secured 2 wins, the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Road Course and the Mid-Ohio Sports Car Course. Top 10 finishes in 8 race weekends, leading 53 laps on his way to finishing all events entered. The open wheel success garnered him a test day with Chip Ganassi Racing, running times competitive with 4-time Verizon IndyCar Series champion Scott Dixon and Dixon's own Dallara Chevrolet. That also gave him a test with Delta Wing in Daytona International Speedway in November. He closed the year with an overall pole position in the NASA 25 Hours of Thunderhill, where the team ran up front before retiring after the race's midpoint.
In 2014, Rahal made 10 starts in the PC class, winning twice, taking 2 pole positions and finishing on the podium in 50% of his races. It was Rahal's 2013 season which gained early notoriety, making his debut in the Prototype Life Championship, the first prototype racer to win 6 of 14 races, finished outside the top 3 only twice, earned pole position 6 times, and set 9 fastest rate race laps on the way to his first sports car championship. That success gave him a chance to race in the season-closing American Le Mans Series, Petit Le Mans, as home track of Road Atlanta, driving to a podium finish. Now, Thursday Night Thunder is proud to welcome John Rahal back into the Thunderdome. Hello, how you doing this evening?
Oh, I'm amazing, just here in Atlanta. A lovely night of rain and cold weather, but we're here, we're doing well.
At least you're not in the snow yet.
No. Not in the snow yet, that's true. I'm glad for that.
You've had a really busy off-season, testing in numerous cars for various teams. How do you think the wide variety of racing equipment you've been in recently will help you in the Delta Wing in 2016?
I don't think many, driving different cars really helps you at the Delta Wing. It's a pretty unique driving style, but, when you hit it right. It's, it's kind of its own thing to drive. Testing overseas and then being back here on the States tracks, it's a task. I think it's a little bit underrated, but, we're really happy to be able to have a successful year doing that, and then also some stuff in Europe. So, you know, it's going to be a busy 2016.
I know the car has improved dramatically in speed and time since last season. What realistically are your chances for pole and qualifying for the Works 24?
I think realistically, it, you know, we have a good shot at it. I think Catherine Legg is probably going to qualify the car. I think, you know, she'll do, you know, she'll do us proud. So I think the car is performing better than ever. The team is gelling. It's really a great program to be a part of right now, and I think we're kind of hitting our stride at the right time.
I know last year you competed in Indy Lights in a relatively underfunded team, yet remained competitive throughout the, your starts in that car. You mentioned before that you'd like to continue up the ladder and race in IndyCar in the future. Do you have any leads on that front, perhaps for the Indy 500, the 100th anniversary edition this year?
I have no leads IndyCar-wise, although I wouldn't mind doing the Indy 500 one day before I got married. And I have some other leads in sports cars and such, maybe even back into like a dirt sprint car this year. So, I mean, I have some things that'll be great. You know, doing the whole Indy, you know, Miles to Road to Indy ladder is definitely one of, you know, a highlight in my career. But I'd just say that it's really a hard shell to crack right now with the lack of funding and how expensive Indy Lights is. You know, you can find a sponsor for a couple $100,000, but when you're talking seven figures, it's really hard for the amount of exposure you get in the series to sell that to a big name sponsor when they really want to be on an Indy car. So with that being said, it's really tough times right now in regards to getting it done, but we're super happy to be where we are and doing what we're doing here in sports car racing in the States and sports car racing in Europe.
With the changes in modern technology, where do you see the sport of auto racing going in the next decade?
I definitely can say I don't think it's going the way the FIA is going when saying that it's going to go to cars without drivers. But I think we're at the turnaround at this point, you know, especially with the new P2 cars coming in, the GT3 cars coming in. I think, you know, sports car racing in the States is really about to hit its stride. You're going to have, you know, difficult years of change whenever you have two series come together like ALMS and what used to be Can-Am Rolex. And having those two series come together, you're always going to have a period of, you know, ifs, ands, and what's and buts. I think now is where you're going to see the stride start to happen, the car counts start to fill up, and we're going to start going in the right direction. At least that's obviously what we hope, because all of us at the end of the day, as race car drivers, we want to be out there racing with, you know, 10 to 20 cars. We don't want to be out there racing with 8, 9 of us. So I think it's on a turnaround. I think from what I've seen over the couple of tests I've been doing in Europe, that racing over in Europe is very strong as well. So I think the sports car side of it is about to turn around and kind of take it back up. Maybe I'd say by 2025 we're looking at what we looked at in the 90s, in my opinion. At least I hope so. Maybe I'm optimistic.
And I'd like to throw it out to my co-host, Michael Mullally, and Alfredo Washington, who has a few questions for you as well.
Awesome.
So, testing has already began. What are some of your thoughts on how the season is going to go this year?
I think we're going to have ups and downs, you know, in the Delta Wing. I think definitely Daytona and other tracks that are really smooth, nice flowing tracks are going to be, you know, our strong suit. I think Sebring and some of the bumpy tracks like Sebring and Long Beach and Belle Isle might be, they might be hard races for us. You know, it might, you know, be a kind of a character test. But I think all in all, when it comes to thinking about a whole year of championship, that we're going to be, you know, sitting all right, because I know my boys work hard every week and girls as well. We got Catherine Crawford, Catherine Legg, and a few women on the team, and that's always nice. And I think, in all that with how the team works, that we'll be a good shot for a top three in the championship at the end of the year.
Which race are you most looking forward to and why?
Oh, I mean, it's a tough question, really. The Petit Le Mans, obviously, is really special to me because it's local here in Georgia, and I am from Georgia. It's the first professional race I ever did. I ever got just a paycheck for going to, so really special to me, kind of hits home. I'd say the Rolex 24 is going to be special as well, and It's a tough tie between the two. I know people may not rate the Petit Le Mans where you'd rate the Rolex 24, but it's kind of home for me.
Since we last spoke with you, have there been any major changes in your career?
I'd say definitely a career shift. You know, you're going from LMPC to, a factory prototype deal here. It's a lot different, not having the driver rating really matter at all. You know, you're back in a pro situation. You're going to work every single day. Your co-driver's not off of you. They're actually pushing you to the next level. You guys are working together to make each other better. Catherine's really good at that. Andy Merrick's another, true testament to that, to kind of getting the best out of you at every corner of the track. So, I mean, that's definitely a phenomenal change in my opinion. The Indy Lights deal kind of pushed me to the next level in my opinion, just having to, you pull out of the pits there and every single apex counts from the time you're on cool tires to, pulling into the pits just to get that extra 2 seconds into the pits to be able to make a change and get a whole lap in instead of missing the lap. So I think, since 2014, there's been a lot of wholesale changes in my game, and I'm ready to showcase them this year.
Of all the tracks you have competed on previously, which tracks do you feel you have a greater shot at dominating on this season?
I'd say for sure Road Atlanta and Mazda Raceway and Spa. It's not really announced what I'm going to do at Spa, but I think those are the three tracks where I really feel at home at.
What has been the toughest part about racing professionally?
I'd say being able to put B2B deals together if you're in a situation where you're running open wheel and you need to find sponsorship monies. And also having the foot in the door with the right team and being in the right place at the right time without being annoying. You have these team owners that are looking at all they know about you. They know about most of the drivers in the paddock, but the time isn't really right. So you're trying to stay in their face and kind of like upfront personal with them without, being annoying and people saying, hey, that kid's overdosed. Like, I don't need that on my team. So it's kind of a tough balance, especially at a young age, like 20, you really want to drive and you really want to go to the next level and you really think you have a shot at winning with this team. You got to figure out how to, have enough confidence to introduce yourself to a team owner in a professional way, but know how to stay out of their way in the same time and let them work and do it at the right time. So it's just like your first day stepping out of college into a business world. I'd say all in all, it's a task and it's balance that you really have to figure out and kind of come into your own in.
Do you have any current rivals going into this season?
I mean, everyone's technically a rival, right? You want to win. So I wouldn't say I have any rivals, especially in the T-class, because it's kind of a new adventure for me. I know some people in LMPC that I won't mind shutting the door on once in a while. Being in the T-class, it's a new place. I haven't had those people cut me off or kind of do me wrong yet. So I wouldn't say I have any, this is really who I want to go after, but I'd say I want to perform my best as well as Catherine does. And we're going to give it all every race to be as close to the front as possible.
I know today they brought out the a listing of some of the balance of performance changes they made for their Rolex 24 at Daytona. Do you think those are fair to the Deltawing team? Or do you think they're going to make the race more even overall?
I mean, if I'm going to play the game with you on a radio, I'm going to say that was totally unfair. We shouldn't have that. But, I mean, IMSA knows what they're doing. Those guys got it figured out. They know who's playing the game. They know who's being legitimate. They're going to make their calls regardless. And I wouldn't say saying yay or nay to which one is the outcome of it is going to be positive for us as a team. So I'd say those guys are in charge. They know what they're doing. We trust them. And, we think at the end of the day, we're going to have a good race with the Chevys and we're going to have a good race with the Honda P2 cars. And we're also going to have to throw down with the Ford DPs that Ganassi are bringing. So I think between them and Mazda, everyone's going to have a good battle, and I think everyone's going to be within, 2-3 tenths, which in a 24-hour race, that's really what you look for, right? I mean, obviously it's going to be reliability that wins this race and be consistency. So having the fastest car really isn't going to determine whether you're going to win the race. Who sits on the pole there means nothing, absolutely nothing, even though it means a lot to their driver egos. So, you know, that pole is a cool deal, but it's really how we're going to be in the long run.
Well, I wish you lots of luck at the Rolex 24, plus throughout the rest of the season, and hopefully we get to talk to you later in the year as well.
Awesome. It'd be a pleasure.
Thank you very much. Our next guest this evening is Catherine Lake. Catherine burst onto the racing scene in 2001 by beating future F1 star Kimi Räikkönen's lap record and earning a pole position in Formula Ford, which earned her the British Racing Drivers' Cup prestigious Rising Star accolade. Heading to the U.S. in 2005, Lake won her first start in Formula Atlantic, the first woman to win a developmental open wheel race in North America, on her way to a third place finish in the championship.
Earning a spot on the PKV racing team in 2006, she became the first woman to lead a lap in Champ Car Series history, pacing 12 laps at the front of the field in Milwaukee. Legg moved to sports car in 2008, driving for several years in the German Tour Car Series, returning to the U.S. in 2012. Legg drove in the IndyCar Series in the Indy 500 before joining the Delta Wing team last season.
At Road America in 2013, Legg became the first one to lead an American Le Mans Series race, when she took Delta Wing to the front of the field for the first time early in the event. She is one of only two drivers to pilot both the Delta Wing Roadster and the coupe version of the revolutionary prototype. We are now pleased to welcome Catherine Lake to the program. How are you doing this evening?
Hi. Great, thank you. How are you?
Very good. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
First off, how did you get your start in racing?
I started much as many other drivers do in go-karts. I was 9 years old, and I had a passion for anything that had wheels and gave me adrenaline and was competitive as well. So I started many years ago now racing karts, and I did that actually for 10 years. And I didn't think that professional racing would be an option for me. I just pursued it as hard as I could for as long as I could, and I was one of the very lucky ones, I think.
What's your greatest racing moment?
My greatest what, sorry? Pardon?
What's your greatest racing moment?
I think my greatest racing moment would probably be Long Beach 2005, where it was my first Atlantic race. I had messed up in qualifying, and I clipped the wall. So I started from pretty much near the back of the field, and I came through, and I won the race. And just the look on everybody's face, my dad, you know, it just the pride and everything that, and Kevin Kalkoven, who showed, you know, faith in me, I guess, from the beginning, just to see the look on their faces as much as anything to validate what I had believed in myself. I think that was probably, to me, the pinnacle and the turning point.
Now, you've been involved in the Delta Wing program for some time now. How do you feel the program has evolved, and do you think it has brought about positive change in the sport?
I love being part of the Delta Wing program. You know, to drive for Dr. Panos is a huge honor for any driver. He's been I don't know how to say it, because he's been the pinnacle of American sports car racing for a very long time. When he did ALMF, and he's just been racing so many different kinds of cars, and he's so forward-thinking, and it's really kind of neat to be part of a development program. You know, I have been there for 3 years now. I've seen it through from the Roadster to the Coupe, and we've made leaps and bounds of progress and changes. Literally no component on the car is the same as where we started, which is when you know that you're making the right decisions and you're changing things for better. Really, I mean, yes, we've taken two steps backwards at some points, and that's how you learn and how you move forward. But I'm just so fortunate to have the crew that I have and to be surrounded by the team that I am. And I have learned so much as a driver developing a car and moving forward, and also patience, you know, because sometimes it hasn't been easy. But at the raw test, I think we showed that we really have the raw speed and the capability to get the job done now.
As a professional race car driver with an impressive resume, what, in your assessment, is the current health of auto racing?
Auto racing as a whole is really difficult, actually, to, I would say, comment on, because there's so many different classes. You know, you have stock cars, you have open wheel, you have sports cars, you have Formula E kind of global racing, you have, oh, goodness gracious me, there's so many different classes, and you have, like, ladder series, and honestly, I don't think I'm well qualified enough on each of them to tell you what I think the current kind of climate is. I can tell you from my point of view that I think it's been through its ups and downs and it's coming back. Definitely from open wheel and sports car racing side point anyway. You know, hopefully we'll be back to the heyday soon, but there's so many different things going on that people can go and do and see that I don't think it's ever going to be the same. It's just going to evolve into something cooler. And, yeah, I think it's coming back. And I think that the passion that people are showing to go to the races is coming back, which is, as a driver, what we need. You know, we're only there because of the fans. So the more fans we can get, the better. And it's really cool when you get the fans come up and they know, literally they know more about my past career than I can remember, which is awesome.
That leads me directly to my next question, which is, it's hard to argue that the IMSA series has undergone a rebirth in the past couple of years, providing excellent on-track competition. However, this on-track success has yet to yield increased ratings or attendance at some of the events. What would you do to try and get more people interested in the sport?
I think to a certain extent, you have to market the teams, market the drivers, market the brands. You know, we're here because of manufacturers as well. Panos is a manufacturer, Honda is a manufacturer, Chevrolet is a manufacturer, and they're all there to, A, improve their road cars because they do it for technology, but B, it's competition. So I think organically, first and foremost, and then secondly, you know, making the drivers' personalities, making the cars the star. The guys that are doing this know far more about this kind of stuff than I do. I'm literally just the driver. But if you can make things simple for the fans and you can get them behind a certain car or a certain driver, then I think that that's key. I think class reorganization, you know, if you just had GT or you just had P cars, then it would be easier for them to follow. On a 24-hour race, for example, if you're there, it's really not, you know, who's doing what, who's where, who's the numbers on the side of the cars have helped a lot, but I think they're going in the right direction, but they've got politically so many different pulls and different directions, and everybody has good arguments, then it makes it difficult, and I wouldn't want their job for all the tea in China. I think they do a great job.
No, thank you very much. I'd like to throw you out to Michael Mullally, my co-host, who has a couple of questions for you as well.
Okay.
Although there are a few more women in the paddock this year, it is still a male-dominated sport. How do you feel being one of a handful of female drivers in the series?
I don't feel really any different to any other driver. I think that the car doesn't know the difference. My team, within my team, I'm treated pretty much the same. I think maybe outside, I think very... Within racing, I think it's not a thing. With it, you know, it's only on the periphery and the outskirts that it is a thing. I think for the most part, my contemporaries and the other teams and everything just see me as a race car driver, and they don't see me as a female race car driver. It's just I'm doing what the guys are doing.
What is your favorite type of auto racing?
I am not auto racingist. I like most forms. You know, I'd love to try my hand at sprint car, and I was, like, one of my dreams is absolutely to drive a stock car. So I think all forms have their positives, and I love endurance racing. I love open wheel racing. I like them all for different reasons, but there isn't one that I would say I only want to do this. You know, I have a lot of things still left on my bucket list that I want to achieve.
Given the experience you have at all sorts of different tracks, which track do you consider to be the most challenging for you?
Hmm.
challenging for me or challenging for me in the Delta Wing would probably be an easier question to answer, at least. I personally love, like, the Road Americas and the Watkins Glens of the world, just because they have character, they're old school, they have a bit of everything, where you're challenged in every area. If you're talking about just the Delta Wing, then probably somewhere like COTA is challenging from the point of view that there's lots of change of directions, which does not make it easy for us. But for me as a driver, I think every track has a different challenge attached to it.
Who has been your biggest inspiration throughout your racing career?
That's easily my father. Growing up, I watched people like Ayrton Senna and Nigel Mansell and the Andretti's, and Prost and so many people who I looked to for inspiration, I guess you could call it inspiration. But really the biggest person has been my dad. He's been there for me when I've been down. He's picked me up, and he's been there for the good things as well, and he's been the voice of reason and somebody who I can run things past it. Whatever time of day or night it is, if I need to call them. So, if it wasn't for him, I would not be sat here talking to you right now.
If you weren't involved in motorsports, what career choice do you think you'd be in now?
I don't ever really want to think about what I would do if I wasn't racing, because then that lets the doubt creep in, which I'm not prepared to do quite yet. I'm not there yet. When I was a child, I had lots of different things I wanted to be. I wanted to be a fighter pilot. I wanted to be an economist. I think I'd probably be doing something. When I stopped racing, I think I'd probably want to do something in television or on the property side. But, like, this is all speculation. I am 110% focused on being a race car driver, so that's what I'm going to be until I'm grown up.
I know you mentioned in the past that you're interested in going back to the Indy 500. Do you have any firm plans about doing that this year for the 100th anniversary?
Yeah, I think we announced that back in May. We were doing an all-female team called Grace Autosport. So, that's pretty exciting. We shall be there for the 100th running. I am looking very much forward to it. I love the Indy 500, and it's one of those races that you want to win more than you need oxygen. I mean, it's just, it's under your skin. It's a bug that you get. It's like the Daytona 24-hour. It's one that you need to have won. So I'm excited about going back there and doing that. I'm excited about the Grace project and the all-female team and promoting STEM. That's very important. You know, it's easy for young men, let's call them, boys, to go to a racetrack and see mechanics and engineers and drivers and be like, you know, I want to do that. I want to go over the wall and change tires. So they have role models and they have examples, and girls really don't. I mean, literally they go to a racetrack and they see some scantily clad women and some lycra, and they're like, hey, daddy, I want to be a grid girl. Well, we want to give them the opportunity to be like, oh, look, I want to go over the wall and change tires, or I want to be an engineer, or I want to be a driver. And you have to lead by example, and I think that's very important. You know, most children do something that in some way somebody close to them is attached to, and they know that role. A lot of people follow in their parents' footsteps or teachers, or there's some kind of direction there. So if we can inspire some people to go into STEM subjects, not just girls but just in general, to go into the STEM subjects and see real life application of how, okay, actually science is pretty cool because this is what we can do, we can be on a race car team, then that's something that's very important to me.
This is the 20th anniversary of Panos Motorsports. Which race do you think would be the best to have the Spirit of America car in victory lane for the 20th anniversary of this game?
That's a tough one. Obviously, we've got Daytona coming up, so I'm like laser focused on Daytona, and I would think that would probably be a great one for the panel's God Bless America car to be in. You know, anyone, everyone. I don't think, again, we have a home race in Petit Le Mans. That would be awesome. But we are going out to try to win every single race that we go to.
Well, we wish you lots of luck in trying to win all the races. That would actually be pretty awesome to see you have a dominant car in Daytona. I was at the Roar, and the car looked really good, looked really fast, and it was impressive. Hopefully you have a good race and have a really great season. And thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Once again, we'd like to thank Sean Rahal and Catherine Legg for coming on the program this evening. And we wish them lots of luck in the Panos Spirit of America car for the 2016 season. Next week, we're going to have our first time. We've got a female motocross racer on the program, which would be pretty impressive to shift gears a little bit away from the sports cars. And the following week, we'll come back to this world of sports car racing and be talking to one of a woman who's called the sort of like the race mom of the series. She'll be on the show to review their Rolex 24 Daytona, Vicki Miller, and give us a little bit of her insight into the sport. She traveled all over the world following sports cars, and she's been to all different sorts of races this past year. I'm not exactly sure how many races she's been to, and we'll ask her that, as well as how she first got involved in the sport. And it'll be quite the interesting review program for the Rolex 24 at Daytona. So how's the world of racing in your neck of the woods there? I know it's a little cold and icy for most motorsports to be going on, but what's the next race you're planning on going to?
Well, there really isn't any racing until about May, but I do plan on going to Race Wars in April. It would be nice if I could race my Eclipse, but I don't think my parents will let me. Yeah, I know there's drifting on, like, towards Seattle over there, but I don't know. I only know that because my cousins participate in it, and they have, like, really nice cars, so I don't know why they would even risk it. But, yeah, so, I mean, I guess there's, you know, some racing other than, like, the circle track and stuff, but it's too cold to really watch anything. Like, it's cold. Nobody likes to be cold.
Yeah, it's definitely a little chillier there than it is down here, although it's been a little chilly here for Florida for the past few weeks. So hopefully it warms up in time for the Rolex 24 next weekend. It's not really much fun to be sitting up there in the icy conditions or rain or anything else like that. And that is the first major race of the 2016 season, so it should be quite the event. As I stated a little bit with our interviews earlier, they did release some details about the balanced performance, and as I discussed a little bit prior to the program with Sean Rahal, the only cars that did not receive a balance of performance were the Corvette DPs. Now that's kind of an interesting thing, whether there's some sort of hidden agenda there, whether they just weren't performing quite as well as they hoped or whatever. You can't really tell. Maybe they're using them as a baseline for the other cars. Hopefully it makes it a good even race. And as Rahal said, it should be a really close race, especially near the end of it. And it should be an enjoyable race. They announced the TV package for that, which I'm going to be releasing an article on SpeedwayDigest.com probably this evening, if not tomorrow, which details the different places they're going to have that on. It'll be on Fox Sports 1 as well as Fox Sports 2, and then they're going to have some online coverage. It won't bounce around quite as much as it did last season, where it bounced from Fox Sports 1 to Fox Sports 2, back to Fox, back to Fox Sports 2, back to Fox Sports 1. But it'll be a little bit more convenient. At least it'll start and end both on Fox Sports 1, and people know where it is. So that'll make it better. And they also announced they're going to allow their races will be broadcast on Fox Sports 1. So it'll be easy to find the rest of the races of the season instead of having to dig through hundreds of channels and hoping you land on the right one.
Yeah, that is definitely the worst. And then you're like, did I miss the beginning? And then if you missed the beginning, I don't know. I didn't like it either.
Mm-hmm. That was a major bone of contention. They actually did an article. Marsha Pruitt did an article about that, and that kind of brought the whole situation to light. And then they renegotiated their entire deal, and they brought in another analyst because they were originally just going to have the one pit road reporter, and with 54 pit stalls and one guy, that doesn't work very well. So they've got two pit reporters now, which is a little bit better, and they've got a new crew up in the booth. They've got Lee Diffie, who's been on the broadcast before. They also have, I don't remember the guy's first name, but his last name is Kramer. He does the broadcast for Pirelli World Challenge. He's also done some of the Trans Am broadcasts. He's a pretty neat guy. He's got a good grasp of motorsports. They did eliminate Bob Barsha from the coverage, which is an interesting thing. And Bob Barsha was a little bit surprised he'd been cut. There's always a reason for things, and hopefully the broadcast quality is very good this year. I also did an article the other day about the IHRA and the changes that are going on there. They're pretty substantial changes going on at the International Hot Rod Association. The most recent is the fact that they dropped two of their major races, which you can see on speedwaydigest.com. Look up at in the racing news section. Also, the president of the organization was let go. Whether he quit or whether he was urged to resign is a matter of semantics, I suppose. He has been on the program before. He was a very good guy for the series, Mr. Scott Gardner. And we wish him well in whatever he ends up doing. And it's kind of interesting the direction the IHRA is going. I'm not really sure what they have in mind. They dropped a bunch of races this year that they had in the past. They're no longer going to be at Palm Beach International Raceway, which was one of their marquee tracks. They're also not going to be on the West Coast out there in Spokane, Washington. And there's numerous other tracks throughout the country that they dropped, as well as, of course, the Baton Rouge event and some others. What do you think about the changes of the International Hot Rod Association?
Well, I think they seem a little drastic, maybe. But I guess, you know, they have to have the best intention for their sport, so maybe the changes are for the better. I know that when we went to that race in Spokane, I mean, there was a decent crowd and it seemed like everybody was having fun. I know, like, the concession stands and, like, every time I looked up, the like merchandise stand was always full, like, of people. So I don't know, I think whatever they're doing or whatever they're trying to do, they have the best intention for their sport. I'm as curious as you are.
Yeah, the only thing I'm sure of is the fact that the National Hot Rod Association is happy that they're having problems there with their front office. They've got Gardner thing and some of the other events they've dropped, and I'm sure the head of the NHRA is contacting all the IHRA guys and saying, hey, we haven't made any drastic changes here. Come on and race for us and see our big crowds and enjoy our new broadcast on Fox. See how your career goes from there.
Yeah, I guess we're going to find out.
Yeah. As you just alluded to, both of us will be heading out to the National Hot Rod Association events this season. I'll be going to the Gator Nationals in March, and Michael will be heading out to the race there in Seattle in August. So we'll be reporting on that and letting you know how the what we think about the National Hot Rod Association. I mean, it's been a couple of years since I've been to the Gator Nationals. It's a heck of a drive up to Gainesville from here. It's probably about the same distance as it would be from you to go to Seattle, Washington. Maybe a teeny bit closer, but it's a way in the middle of nowhere there up in Gainesville. The only thing that's there is the University of Florida and a big, huge forest in Ocala. So it's definitely the middle of nowhere, but it's always been a really good track. The speeds are intense. Over 300 miles an hour is common for both the funny cars as well as the top fuel cars. And it should be a pretty good race to attend. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. I tried to, because we haven't been to the one in Seattle in like, I think it's been like 3 years, because we've usually raced on the days that, you know, the races were going on in Seattle. So it's going to be nice to be able to go, but I want to take my nephew because he's never been, and we were going to have my sister bring him down to the one in Spokane. And that's why I was kind of hoping that they would come back, because I think introducing him to the IHRA first and then, you know, the NHRA. But so I'm excited to see how well he does.
Just be sure it doesn't take too many deep breaths when they fire up the engines.
Yeah, and lots of earplugs.
Exactly. Well, we hope that you've had a nice evening tonight, and we hope that you're all prepared for the major storm that's hanging throughout most of the East Coast this evening. All batting down your hatches and you're ready to go and battle the snowstorm that may or may not turn into anything. You never know. It's one of those things you prepare for the worst and hope for the best. So all of you who are listening this evening, hope everything goes well in your neck of the woods there. Be sure to check out past episodes of Thursday Night Thunder, as well as the other shows on the Speedway Digest Radio Network at SpeedwayDigestRadioNetwork.com. You can also check out the show on Facebook by searching for Speedway Digest Thursday Night Thunder in the search bar. I also invite you to read the articles covering all aspects of motorsports at SpeedwayDigest.com.
My bad. It's habit.
It is. Like I said, we've had some pretty good articles the past week about some changes that are going on in the International Hot Rod Association, as well as the different schedules that have come out in the past week, and some more previous stuff about the Rolex 24 Daytona. So I invite you to check that out.
And your Palm Beach Happening. Can't forget about that one.
Exactly. Palm Beach Happening has a lot of stuff going on. It's really happening on the PalmBeachHappening.com. It's had a lot of coverage this past week about the South Florida Fair, as well as other events going on around town. And we've done some preview stuff about about Valentine's Day, which is coming up sooner than you think. So be sure to check out PalmBeach.HappeningMag.com or PalmBeachHappening.com for your latest news about what's going on in South Florida.
Thank you for listening, and we look forward to seeing you again on January 28th in the Thunderdome, when we will be delving into the world of motocross with WMX champion rider Marissa Markelin.
Have a nice evening, and we'll talk to you again next week.